Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. This episode discusses topics that may be triggering, such as violence against Indigenous women, domestic violence, and struggles with mental health. Please take care while listening. What comes to mind when you think of Montana? The brilliant wilderness of Yellowstone? The hues of green and brown farmlands dotting the landscape? Montana is well known for its strikingly diverse terrain, from Glacier National Park to the Rocky Mountains to the Great Plains. But beyond the picturesque scenery lies a crisis, right under our noses. Montana has been the center of studies in recent years regarding an epidemic that seems to have flown under the radar. And when it does appear in the headlines, the subject is quickly dismissed by popular media and shoved back under the rug. In the 2020 census, Montana's population was nearly 1.9 million. Indigenous people make up only 6.7% of the state population. But in 2021, 30.7% of the missing persons cases in Montana entered into the FBI's National Crime Information Center database were cases of missing Indigenous people. At the time that I'm recording this, the Montana Department of Justice website currently lists 50 missing Indigenous people, with 19 of those people having been missing for more than a year. Today, we're focusing on the case of an Indigenous mother who has been missing since 2018. This is the case of 23-year-old Jermaine Austin Charlot. I want to preface this by saying that if you want an incredible deep dive into Jermaine's case, I highly recommend and encourage you to listen to a podcast called Stolen, The Search for Jermaine, which is an 8-episode podcast created and hosted by award-winning Indigenous journalist Connie Walker. Connie did a phenomenal job researching and covering Jermaine's case. She traveled to Montana and interviewed everyone who was close to Jermaine, along with the lead detective on her case. And she visited important locations related to the investigation, from Jermaine's childhood home to the last place that she was seen. The podcast offers so much detailed insight into Jermaine's life and the circumstances surrounding her disappearance. I will put a link to that podcast in the show notes, and again, I strongly encourage you to listen. Born in April 1995, Jermaine Charlot grew up in Dixon, Montana, a tiny town with a population of only 203 people as of 2018. Dixon is located on the Flathead Reservation, which stretches nearly 2,000 square miles across 4 different counties, and is home to the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes of Flathead Nation. Jermaine herself is an enrolled Salish and Kootenai tribal member. Jermaine is the first of 4 children, born to their mother Jennifer, who had Jermaine when she was 15 years old. Growing up, Jermaine split her time between her mom's house and her great-grandparents' house, which happened to be right next door to each other. Jermaine's family was always extremely tight-knit, and as a child, Jermaine was particularly close with her great-grandmother. She spent much of her childhood on the family ranch, helping her great-grandfather tend to the animals, and the time that she spent on the farm evolved into an adventurous spirit and a love for the outdoors as an adult. Jermaine grew up as an avid hiker, and she loved spending her days fishing on the lake. Everyone who knows and loves Jermaine has described her as independent and strong-willed, outgoing and fun-loving. But behind her warm sociability and bubbly sense of humor, Jermaine was struggling with a lot of pain and emotional trauma from a young age. Growing up, she did witness physical violence against members of her family. Her great-grandparents were always a safe haven for her, but when she was 14 years old, she suffered a devastating loss with the passing of her great-grandmother. It was after this that Jermaine started to more noticeably struggle with her mental health. Sometime after this, Jermaine met Michael DeFrance, who was 2 years older than her, and the two quickly started a relationship. When Jermaine was about 17 years old, she actually moved in with Michael, and they lived in a camper outside of Michael's parents' home. According to Jermaine's family, Michael was never well-liked among them, and Jermaine's relationship with him was noticeably toxic. Serious problems arose soon after they moved in together. In April of 2013, police were called to Jermaine and Michael's residence, and Jermaine reported that Michael had struck her in the face multiple times. A police report was filed, and Michael was arrested. In the documents filed after the incident, Michael wrote, quote, "On April 14th, 2013, in Sanders County, I caused bodily injury to my girlfriend," end quote. And under a line that read, quote, "I understand that other possible consequences of a guilty plea are," end quote, Michael wrote, quote, "loss of firearms rights," end quote. On May 6th, 2013, Michael was convicted of a misdemeanor crime of violence, and as a result, he did lose his rights to possess firearms. Indigenous communities, particularly Indigenous women, have statistically faced disproportionate rates of intimate partner violence. In 2016, the National Institute of Justice conducted a study of the experiences Indigenous communities have had with violence. The study revealed that more than 4 in 5 Indigenous women have experienced some form of violence in their lifetime, with 55% of Indigenous women having faced physical violence from an intimate partner, and 66% having faced forms of psychological abuse by an intimate partner. This is in comparison to 49% of white women having experienced physical violence from an intimate partner, and 52% having experienced psychological abuse. Bear in mind that Indigenous men and women only make up around 2% of the entire population of the United States, making the results of this study alarmingly disproportionate. Michael did serve time after his conviction, and after he was released, he and Jermaine stayed in a relationship. A few months after Michael's release, Jermaine posted a series of short vlogs to her YouTube channel in September 2013. In one video, she showcases her artistic talent by painting a piece using only nail polish. In other videos, she talks to the camera and films in a black and white filter, sharing a few details about her personal life at the time. She shared that Michael was away for several weeks at a time working as a firefighter, and Jermaine stayed home alone in their camper. At one point, Jermaine solemnly expressed that she had been crying all throughout the night before because she was feeling so lonely. She seemed incredibly isolated and sad. In one of the videos, Jermaine introduces herself and her idea for vlogging her life at home. She holds up a phone with a badly shattered screen and shows the camera a picture of her boyfriend, Michael. As she shows the picture and introduces him, she flippantly comments, quote, "He's probably not going to be happy. I'm going to tell him I'm going to start blogging on YouTube," end quote. Jermaine only posted 2 more videos to her YouTube channel after that. The last one was posted on September 4th, 2013. Jermaine did, however, remain active on Facebook. She frequently posted updates about her daily life and shared some of her favorite hobbies, like watching anime, playing video games, and knitting. In late 2013, Jermaine announced on Facebook that she and Michael were expecting, and she updated her Facebook regularly, discussing the frustrating symptoms and how excited she was to become a mother. In July 2014, Jermaine welcomed her first son into the world, and a little over a year later, she and Michael had their second son. Over the next couple of years, Jermaine and Michael continued their relationship, and things did not improve. There were more calls to the police over the course of their relationship for domestic abuse incidents. In May 2017, after years of intense arguments and documented incidents of violence, Jermaine decided to free herself from the relationship for good. She reportedly shared updates about the status of her relationship on Facebook, and once even made a post detailing Michael's abuse, but those specific posts are not public. After the breakup, she and her 2 boys moved into her own home in Dixon, close to her grandmother Vicky's house. Over the next year, Jermaine faced a contentious custody battle with Michael, and there were periods of time where he would not allow her to see her boys. This must have broken Jermaine's heart. According to everyone who knew her, she was a devoted mother who was making huge strides in life to be able to better provide for her sons. She picked up a part-time job at the Big River Cantina in Dixon, and on top of that, she worked other jobs, such as planting trees for the Forest Service. By the summer of 2018, she had plans to become a firefighter for the Forest Service, following in her mom's footsteps. After her breakup with Michael, and despite still having to interact with him in order to see her boys, Jermaine did see other people and maintained an active social life with friends. she was determined to make positive changes in her life. On the night of June 15, 2018, Jermaine headed to downtown Missoula, Montana, about a 45-minute drive from Dixon, to hang out with friends at a few local bars. She and her friends started the night at a bar called Dark Horse, before moving on to the Golden Rose and Badlander bars, which shared the same building. As far as we know, there was nothing out of the ordinary about Jermaine's behavior or activities that night. On June 16, 2018, Jermaine's family realized that they hadn't heard from Jermaine since the night before, which was completely unlike her. They attempted many times to text and call Jermaine, but received no response. Jermaine was an avid social media user. She was particularly active on Facebook, regularly making updates and posting videos. And she even posted funny lip-syncing TikTok videos a few hours before she went to Missoula on the night of June 15th. But her family noticed that there was no activity on any of her social media after her night out at the bar. At the time she disappeared, Jermaine had recently started seeing someone new, but it appears that he was quickly ruled out in connection with her sudden disappearance. Missoula police have offered up very few details related to Jermaine's case, so there are many aspects of the investigation that the general public doesn't have any insight into, which isn't uncommon, but it does create a lot of questions surrounding the circumstances of Jermaine's disappearance, as well as questions about the progress of the investigation thus far. Jermaine's family reported her missing to the Missoula police on June 18, 2018, but they have openly stated that they were not taken seriously and that there was no sense of urgency that a mother of two had suddenly vanished and had made no contact with her family. The original detective on Jermaine's case was only assigned to the case for one day. It wasn't until 11 days after Jermaine was last seen that Detective Guy Baker was assigned to her case and began an investigation. 11 days of potential leads lost. 11 days of potential evidence that could very well have been covered up in that time. The Badlander Bar where Jermaine was last seen was directly next to the Missoula Housing Authority. And between midnight and 1 a.m. on June 16, 2018, the Housing Authority security cameras captured Jermaine walking in the alley behind the Badlander Bar before she turned a corner out of sight. This footage has never been released publicly. Initially, there was no further information about who Jermaine was spending time with that night, or who she may have left with after walking out of the camera's view in the alley. But her family later revealed that it was actually Michael, Jermaine's ex-boyfriend and the father of her two sons, who was the last person to see her that night. At that time, she and Michael had been broken up for several months, though they were in the midst of a custody battle over their two boys. Unspecified witnesses reported that after Jermaine left the Badlander, she was dropped off at the Orange Street Food Farm, about a 3-minute drive from the bar. The grocery store was also close to where Jermaine had planned to stay that night. According to an article by the Great Falls Tribune, a judge approved a search warrant in June 2018, just days after Jermaine was last seen, and granted permission for the Missoula County Sheriff's deputies to conduct a search of Michael DeFrance's property and vehicles. The search was performed on June 27, 2018, and it was the first contact that authorities had with Michael DeFrance in connection with Jermaine's disappearance. The warrant also revealed that authorities traced Jermaine's cell phone to the area of Michael's home in Evero, Montana, and that her phone was active in this area until 10 a.m. on June 16, 2018, just a few hours after she was captured on surveillance footage, leaving the Badlander in Missoula. Beyond that, there is no further information about Jermaine's movements on the night she disappeared. Detective Guy Baker and the Missoula County authorities have been extremely tight-lipped about Jermaine's case since the investigation started. Over the last 4 years, there have been numerous tips called in to investigators, but Jermaine has still not been found. In June 2019, Detective Guy Baker told NBC News that investigators had interviewed more than 50 people and executed multiple search warrants in connection with Jermaine's case. He also told NBC News that authorities have submitted evidence for testing over the years, but none of the evidence found has generated new leads or provided any answers. There was no movement in Jermaine's case for years, until July 2021, 3 years after she disappeared. On July 28, 2021, Michael DeFrance, Jermaine's ex-boyfriend, was arrested by Missoula County authorities on charges of prohibited firearm possession. According to the Great Falls Tribune, documents showed that on both June 27, 2018, and October 2, 2018, Michael was illegally in possession of firearms. June 27, 2018, was also the same day that Missoula authorities conducted their first search of Michael's home, property, and vehicles in relation to Jermaine's case. Remember, back in May 2013, he lost his rights to own firearms after his conviction for partner and family member abuse against Jermaine. Despite finding him in illegal possession of firearms, Missoula authorities did not arrest Michael for another 3 years after the discovery. On August 2, 2021, Michael pled not guilty to the firearms charges, and U.S. Magistrate Judge Kathleen DeSoto ordered him released pending trial. In September 2021, after multiple motions were filed to delay the trial, Michael's trial was vacated. Over a year after his initial arrest for these charges, just last month in August 2022, Michael's defense team filed more motions to once again delay the trial. The trial still has not taken place, and there has not yet been a hearing date set. Detective Guy Baker reportedly told the Missoulian that Michael's arrest and the charges filed were in relation to Jermaine's case, but there has been no further information released about that. And that is all of the information we have related to Jermaine's case. Her family still organizes frequent searches for her, and they gather every year on her birthday with flowers and pictures to honor her. But they still have no answers. Jermaine is a deeply loved daughter, granddaughter, sister, niece, cousin, and mother. She loves drawing and painting, curling up to play video games, and knitting blankets and baby clothes. Her true passion was for the outdoors, and she has aspirations of fighting wildfires for the U.S. Forest Service. She is one of many Indigenous people whose family deserves answers, and who deserves to be brought home. Jermaine Austin Charlo, who may also go by Jermaine Morgeau, or Liz, was last seen leaving the Badlander Bar in Missoula, Montana, between midnight and 1 a.m. on June 16, 2018. Leading up to that, Jermaine had spent the night out with friends at three local bars in Missoula. Witnesses have reported seeing her being dropped off at the Orange Street Food Farm soon after she left the bar, but there are conflicting reports about that. At the time of her disappearance, Jermaine was 23 years old. She has brown hair and brown eyes, is 5 feet 9 inches tall, and at the time, she weighed approximately 130 pounds. Jermaine was last seen wearing a gray hoodie with a brown Under Armour logo, a blue and tan baseball cap, blue jeans, and cowboy boots. She has a flower tattoo on her chest and a deer tattoo on her left shoulder blade. If you have any information about the disappearance of Jermaine Charlo, please call the Missoula Police Department at 406-396-3261 or Detective Guy Baker at 406-396-3217. All sources for this episode will be listed in the show notes. If you'd like to request a case for me to cover, you can find the link to the case request form in the show notes as well. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Crime Again Pod, on Instagram at Crime Again Podcast, and on TikTok at Crime Again Podcast. Links to other pages like YouTube, Patreon, and Good Pods can also be found in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.